getting down here. What that means for me, if I say I'm an alcoholic, is alcohol is not my problem. Alcohol is my solution. Whatever it is that makes me restless, irritable, and discontent, that's my problem. You know, and I'm one of those who, my MO is I got pleasure by sneaking around. Anybody else get pleasure by sneaking? At 6 years old, I had a pull your pants down club with a girl down the street. We were the only two members. That started a whole long series of things there. There was thing, you know, I was always, you know, one of those that had a lot of potential if I only applied myself. Anybody else here had a lot of potential if you only applied yourself? That's kind of the story of us, isn't it? A lot of potential. And I grew up here. I was born in Georgia Baptist Hospital and then grew up in East Point, and then we moved up to Marietta. And I had a lot of trouble in my elementary school there. And they said that they took me to a child psychologist, said I was bored. So they sent me to a private school, and my parents did that, and they really couldn't afford that. It's over on Pace Academy on Pace's West Pace's Ferry Road. Now, what I was though, I was the guy from up in the country, Marietta, you know, Terra Mill Road. At that time, there were horses all around the pastures. This was, you know, around 63 or 64 at that time. And so in that neighborhood, I was one of the early people there. We had a three-story tree hut there. We even had a spinner on the top for spin the bottle. I don't think we ever used it. We were just very hopeful. And so we had that going. In fact, it was funny because the guy who was the builder in the neighborhood came by and saw this monstrosity going up. We said, oh, our parents bought that for us, you know. And our parents asked us where the wood came from. Oh, the builder gave it to us. Keep us out of the way, you know. But it was one of those things about leading a double life, because at the neighborhood, I was sort of the ringleader. And back at the school, I was bottom of the rung. In fact, there was one individual who really made it his life joy was to make me miserable. You know, it was just one of those characters. In fact, later, I've seen him recently at several of the class reunions that we've had. And it's amazing how I can let one individual like that have made so many changes in my life. And it wasn't him at all. It was my reaction to what he did. And so there was this crazy feeling of less than, and at the same time, you know, this wanting to do all kind of crazy. At 8 years old, I sniffed glue. My sister turned me on to marijuana at 10 because it was a step up. And then at 12, we mixed the clear liquor together and put in a Sprite bottle, and we took the color liquor and we put that in a Coke bottle and went out in the woods. In order not to get in trouble by having any of it found, we drank it all. And we all got drunk, you know, and came home to my house, and we all got sick, and my sister was the first one to come home. She had to clean it all up. She still reminds me of that every now and then. And the next day, though, I got to skip school because I was sick. She told my mom I had the flu. So there weren't any real negative consequences. I don't know about any of you guys, but a lot of my story started off with fun, and then it got fun with consequences, and then it got to be nothing but consequences. You know, they say in the jail, they say the trouble with trouble is it starts out looking like fun. I found out something truly amazing in this program. The funny thing about fun is it starts out looking like trouble. You talk about those CDs that I give out. Started with a resentment. I'd just been in the program. There's this lawyer that I was doing work for. And he flew to Dallas to go to a roundup. And he came back with one CD. And he said, can you make a bunch of copies of these for me? And I'm like thinking under my breath, you cheap son of a gun. You know, you got all this money to fly down there. You got this big house. You know, you got, you know, Ethernet going through everything. And you want a copy of CD. You're going to put me to all this. And I said, okay, fine, I'll do it. Well, the speaker was Ed Mutum. And if anybody's ever heard Ed, he passed away, but I had a chance to thank him for that because it started this whole thing. I said, are there any more like that? And Ed's an amazing story of forgiveness. It made the national news. It's such a story of forgiveness. And I needed forgiveness. I needed not only forgive others, but I needed to learn how to forgive myself. So I was through high school and everything, it was the 60s, you know, so we were doing a little bit of everything. I was in a riot in downtown Atlanta. Got to be towards the end of my high school, and I stopped smoking, and I really kind of toned everything down. And my parents ran away from home when I was 17 and moved to Alabama and to a little town of 2000, and they had a place for me and everything. I said, I'm not going. I grew up hitchhiking down to Atlanta and going down to the park, you know, listening to music down at Piedmont Park and selling joints, you know, out of my guitar case. And 2000, you know, so I worked downtown, lived on 12th Street between Peachtree and West Peachtree, and I had the great job title at this insurance company. I was chief inserter, which I still think is just a crazy name. But I was running a Phillipsburg six-station inserting machine for this little. But I tell you what, I got to living there and living on my own. I thought, you know, it's probably not such a bad idea to get a college education. So I decided, and I moved down with my parents. Really, right in between there, we got we were going down one weekend with a couple of friends, and it was midnight, and we were having like a beer apiece or something, and we stopped to go to the bathroom because there was nothing open in Chambers County, and the only car to come by was this unmarked car, and a guy got out with a big pistol and pointed it at us, and you know, I thought it was a deliverance or something. And we didn't know until the black and white came that was the sheriff. He never told us anything. There was no rights read or anything. But we spent, I wrote a little poem that said, last night I spent my time in Chambers County Jail with the gray bars of freezing steel and the busted radio whose poor unguarded fate it was to waste away in jail. But there was really no, for me, there wasn't any consequences. I didn't have any, but the guy driving, he had consequences, you know, from it. And the guy who was in the back seat had the wrong pair of pants, and when he emptied his pocket, a gram of hash came out. He didn't even know he had it. So they had all consequences. And me, I didn't have that many consequences. I got a poem out of it, you know. But during the, I applied myself, and I got a 4.0 in the junior college there, because I couldn't make it into the Auburn or anything, because I was, you know, C average in this prep school and high school. And I decided that I wanted to go someplace with tall mountains. So I called up the long distance information in Colorado, and I asked them, what colleges do you have? Oh, we have Colorado and Colorado State. And I said, no. I said, no more, just a second. And I pulled a penny out of my pocket, and I flipped it, and it was tails. And I decided to go to Colorado State, and based on that. And the first week I got there, I went down, there was a refrigerator handing out meeting, you know, and I came down a little bit late and sat down on the couch next to these two ladies, and I butted into the conversation. Now, anybody knows me knows that's hard to believe that I would butt into the conversation. But one of those ladies is now my wife, and we've celebrated 34 years, so... recently, but we said something before we started. I'm very fortunate we made this decision, and that divorce was no option. Now, this is not saying anything about anybody that's gone through divorce or anything. It's just we had made that decision early on, and I'm very fortunate, you know, because I really, what happened is during the 80s, we got married, we came back to Atlanta, I started applying myself more, I wound up getting a job with Equifax, I started doing programming. I got my undergraduate degree in history with a specialty in India and China. And the reason that was because one of those hippies back there asked me a question when I was 15. And he asked me the question, he says, is it a coincidence you're a Christian in a Christian country? If it's the truth of the universe, why does it matter where you're born? And that was a heavy question for a 15-year-old. And I began to look, I was set up on top of Kennesaw Mountain, and I began to imagine the curve of the earth. I had wonder, a little bit of wonder and awe at that time. Today, wonder and awe is at the core of my program. I am very, very glad that acceptance is not the answer to any of my problems, really, today. Acceptance is a half measure. It's a very good start. If you're new in the program, acceptance is a really good start. But it tells me we cease fighting everything and everyone. And if I'm in awe and wonder at the world and at creation. I like this little Indian yogi who said, to know reality, you must be astonished. To be alive is an astonishing thing. But you know what, for the alcoholic, it's not enough. It's not enough to be some of the most amazing matter on this side of the universe. We're sending out probes. We're trying to find somebody, not like you, like me. Something like me, some sort of life form somewhere, anything, I was sitting at the end of a meeting and they were saying, applaud yourself for a great meeting. And I didn't because there was a fly crawling around on my arm. And I changed the alternator in my car the day before. And it took two of us. And it's this big chunk of metal. And all it does is take circular motion, create alternating current, and then shift it into direct current. This fly has almost a billion cells in it. And every cell is doing 30 to 40,000 chemical reactions every second. And nobody can understand it. And it flies. And my car doesn't fly. Now, if they found this thing on Mars with the Martian rovers, they'd spend billions of dollars to bring it back. And I like what Earl Hightower says, can I marvel in the ordinary? If I can marvel in the ordinary, then it's this whole thing about the disease is not enough. I'm not enough. Did anybody here ever have enough? Did you ever? What would enough look like? You see, when I first got my job at Equifax, I got my first new car. And it was a Grand Am. And it was up at the little Pontiac place there at Windy Hill and 41. And I'm driving it out, and there's a Bonneville sitting in the corner. Right in the, you know, they put it right there in the lot, so you'll just be disappointed when you drive your other car out, you know. And I look at it and go, well, okay. And I'm not even made a payment. I've not even gotten it out of the parking lot yet. And I've already not enough. Now, during the 80s, though, I was a responsible drinker. I mean, I would drink a little bit and set it down. It was not that way with me. My sister was not allergic to poison ivy until somebody burned a lot of poison ivy behind her house. And now she gets around it and she breaks out. What happened to me is I started going through the 80s and I got this job and things were going great, but I'll tell you what started to happen. In the book called The Varieties of Religious Experience by William James that Bill Wilson was reading when he had his hot flash, one of the things he talks about that's the thing that signifies it that is common among anybody that's had a spiritual experience is a shift from pessimism to optimism. I went from optimism to pessimism. I started looking at what was wrong with my life, what was wrong with my wife, what was wrong with my job. And then I started going, I had an employee and he had a bachelor party. We wound up going to a strip joint. And all of a sudden I'm back to 6 years old, you know, at the Pull Your Pants Down Club, only they do it in style. And I said, this is what I'm, you know, and then I went to a massage parlor. I thought I was just going to get a massage, and she offered the whole treatment, and I accepted. And you know what I told myself? This is rationalization and justification. I said, they have concubines in China and Japan. And delusion, the delusion part of that is I'm not in China or Japan. My wife is neither Chinese or Japanese, you know. And I'm rationalizing, justifying my behavior. And I love this gal. She said she had to come into AA when she could no longer lower her standards to match her behavior. You see, my mom raised me better than that. And the guilt kicked in. And then I started drinking for effect. That's when the difference happens. When I start drinking to change the way I feel. Okay? We drink because we like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive, you know. I think the alcoholic life is the only normal one. And unless I can get a complete psychic change, there's little hope of my recovery. I wound up having a DUI in Atlanta. And I got the bright idea of instead of driving directly home, I went driving around downtown Atlanta at 2 o'clock in the morning with a half a fifth of Courvoisier under my seat and the other half in me. And I wound up going to Fulton County Jail for that night. I blew a .12. And I got out and I was in remorse and I was tearful and I told my wife I was just never going to drink again. But I didn't know about the disease really. And in 6 months, I was drinking again, and I had good reason. I talked myself into it. Clancy says a very clear thing. He says, the mind, when faced with sufficient conflict, will alter its view of reality in order to resolve the conflict. The mind, when faced with sufficient conflict, will alter its view of reality in order to resolve the conflict. I don't stay sober. We do. I come in here because collectively we know. Individually, I think each and every one of us is off just a little bit, and delightfully so. I think it's great how off we are just a little bit. I think it's what makes AA a lot of fun. So I would go and I would quit for a little while and I'd feel good about myself. You know, pretty good about myself. Yeah. And it was like Marcel Marceau, who was the pantomimist. I saw him do this thing called the box. And he's walking along and he hits the box, you know, this thing. And he feels that it's a box and it gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until he's down on the floor and he pries the box up, gets it over and goes, whew, and then starts walking along, hits another wall. You know, and it was like that for me. I would have those periods and it was like a pressure cooker, you know. I'd get a little bit restless. I get a little bit irritable, a little bit discontent. You know, it's the shoelaces, okay? It's not the cancer that gets us drunk. It's the little stuff that just builds up and builds up. That's why the 10th step is so important. I've got to nip those promptly in the bud because they will build up like that pressure cooker. And then I take that drink and whoosh, you know the feeling, right? But then the allergy kicks in, that thing that like my sister has, and that drink takes a drink. I know today that I will never, ever be able to successfully drink again, but here's the neat part about it. This program is not about that I can't ever drink again. I'll tell you what it means. It means that one time I was working for Hewlett Packard. I was building data centers out. They put me on probation because somebody smelled alcohol in my breath around this $1 million worth of equipment, you know? Millions of dollars. And I quit in April of 2001, and I put on the afterburners. You know, we can do that, right? And we start producing. We're not drinking. Yeah, we're gonna make up for lost time, you know. And I was getting accolades and everything. And then the CEO of HP laid off everyone on probation, August of 2001. I said, I'm going to come back a millionaire. Next year, I'm going to be a millionaire. Today, I'm a millionaire many times over in an entirely different currency. An entirely different currency. And it's a boundless, it's endless, and have all that I require at every moment. And so I held out for a little while, and I was in Birmingham, and I was at my sister's house, and I was working on this program because I was going to build this thing up, and then I saw 9/11 hit. And I knew what it was going to do to my industry. I knew that. And I lasted for about 2 to 3 more days. And then they went out to a German club, and I was sitting there working on the program, and the blackjack in the counter, underneath the counter. See, we all know where the alcohol is, right? And it was calling out my name, you know. Hey, over here. You know, come on. Over here. Just a little bit. Just one. You know. Can't hurt. And I had 3. I didn't drink the whole bottle because I get pleasure by sneaking around. Remember that part? And I get caught if I drink too much. But you know where I am the next morning? 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm in front of the liquor store that opens. I find out at 9:30. And you know what I do? I wait. See, if I do this thing today, I will never, ever have to be that person sitting in the parking lot waiting. I will never have to drink again. At that moment, I had to drink. Well, I would do this for the next several years, and I quit in September of 2003. In Thanksgiving of 2003, I'm back in Birmingham with the family. Family gets along great. I've got no excuse in terms of a family for my drinking. You know what I found out? That's probably neat because no excuse. There's really no excuse. Okay, there's rationalization and justification. But if I drank myself like a pig and I had no excuse, it must not matter. Must not matter what my background is, what my history is. It's just that I'm an alcoholic. And what I do now, not what happened in my past. So I go and I get $300 out of an ATM and money we cannot afford. I drive all the way from Birmingham to Atlanta to go to the Mardi Gras. I'm going all along going, don't think about what you're doing. Don't do that. La, 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 la. You know? And I hit that Mardi Gras. I go to a massage parlor. 3-4 days later, I've got 105 degree temperature. I'm sure I've got some sort of sexually transmitted disease. And that's in December of 2003. And I promptly did something about it, and in February I went to the doctor. So, you know, just wishing it away. And then some very strange things were happening with my body, very strange stuff. And that happens. The, you know, alcohol hits every organ of the body. It is not a mild drug. And I wound up, I went to the doctor, but I wouldn't do the pee test because I knew that they'd find out I had been drinking. It's okay if you find out I've got a sexually transmitted disease and I'm 25 years married, but don't take away my solution, right? Later on in May, I actually told the doctor what was going on. And I love this guy. He said, we should go to veterinarians because they're used to treating patients who won't tell them what's going on. Anybody else here, you know? And the bill even says, we don't even give these honest guys a break. You know? And I finally told him what was going on, and he said, oh, you're self-medicating. How true is that? Feel this way, gotta go here. See you guys later. I feel this way, gotta go here. I love what Ann Smith said in a diary, Aunt Dr. Bob's wife, and she kept this diary from 1933 to 1939. And in it she said, feelings are the fruit, not the root of my faith. What does that mean? I was acting on my feelings. They were becoming the root of my actions. And what I would believe in was anything that would change my feelings. That's what I had faith in. Today, the principles are the root. And then at the end of the day, I can reach up and pluck the succulent fruit of a day well spent. I harvest my feelings. I no longer act on them. Feelings are the physiological reaction of the body to a thought. They have a machine that measures it. It's called a lie detector. Right? They hook you up to a lie detector. They ask you some questions and it goes off the charts. You know, the mind senses the feelings. The feelings sense the mind. It's this big crazy loop going on. We've got to break the cycle. That's what this program is about. Getting down to action. Taking actions I don't believe in. And then changing the way I feel afterwards. The funny thing about fun is it starts out looking like trouble. And that seems like a lot of trouble, but it turns out to be the easiest thing I can do. So, I finally, my wife gives me the ultimatum. I'm a guy who is, during these years, from the time I got laid off, I'm starting to cut every thread I have. Because the fewer threads you have connecting the world, the less chance of getting caught. I'm drinking a fifth of vodka a day. I can barely go up sometimes to the ATM because my hand's shaking so much. You know? I'm living a life where I can drive to the ATM and one time throwing up, swallowing it back so I can get to the ATM. That's the guy you have in front of you. The wonderful guy. You know? And that's where the disease would take me. I never want to forget that. Okay? So, I get the ultimatum from my wife, and on the 9th of August in 2004, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I had my last drink, Barton vodka in the plastic bottle. Remember the Courvoisier? I had a pack of cigarettes in my little case. I started smoking. I smoked for 8 to 10 years. My wife didn't know it. I would smoke hanging out the bathroom window on rainy days or when she was asleep in the front, you know, room, because she wasn't sleeping with me. And I'd lied about everything. I'd lied about having an appointment with behavioral services. But I quit on Monday, and I kicked on my own. Now, I want to tell you, when I came in here, I came in as an atheist. Not only was I sure there was no God, I was sure that I could convince you there was no God, because I'd read a lot of black words on white paper. And I was trying to find God in my thoughts. And I wound up finding God between my thoughts. Okay? I found out that I was trying to find a God of my understanding. And I found something that is beyond understanding. Bill talks about it many times. Deep down inside each man, woman, and child is the fundamental concept of God. I had to fully concede to my innermost self that I was alcoholic. That must mean there's two of me. The thing that has to concede and the innermost self. Something happened on the Thursday, about 2 to 3 o'clock in the morning. I'd had my 1 hour of sleep. Anybody been there? Anybody drink to go to sleep? Battling those demons on the white ceiling, right? had that 1 hour of sleep, and I woke up and I said the three-word prayer of an atheist. I said, I need help. And I said it at death. I was a little late coming over here today because I heard that call from somebody. Somebody who had 5 years sober. Let circumstances start to rule the life. Went out and started drinking again. Her mother came and got her son 2 days ago, who actually is my godson, which is a crazy thing for an atheist to have a godson. So what I was doing was reaching out to all the women in the program, which is a neat thing. Now look at the threads I've got. All those threads I cut now, it's amazing. If Bob was helping me out, it's okay, how about this one? No, how about that person? No, how about, okay, that one, they're not answering. Okay, then, boom, got some, they call me back. Wow. Complete psychic change. Bill changed a word in the third step prayer, and as Bill sees it, that's a very appropriate change. It says, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Here's the change. Take away my difficulties that my transcendence over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Now, transcendence sounds like a really big word, but it's got the same number of syllables as alcohol. Transcendence is going from being a bottom feeder, swimming to the surface, growing wings and flying. Transcendence is more about what's on pages 60 to 63, from going from being the actor, wanting to run the show, to being the agent, the guy in the background who's trying to make everybody have a good time and they don't need the name on the marquee, don't even want it on the program. Trying to arrange life to suit myself, trying to get circumstances right. Tell you what, circumstances have nothing to do with the quality of my life. Now that sounds crazy. But I've seen it happen. I've seen it in me. I've been in pain. I've got gout sometimes. I don't have to have that be a problem. Stuck in traffic. Loved it. 6.5 hours going from Marietta to Acworth the other night. And I saw something neat. I saw a guy out there in the street, right around, you know, the crack hotels there. And he's out there with a big old 5 gallon paint bucket of sand and a Dixie cup, and he's throwing sand in front of the cars. Now, I doubt that that Dixie cup full of sand would have helped the traction at all, but it made everything better. You know, he was putting it on our souls almost, you know. You know, and to see that, and now today I look for that in the world and I see it, and when I see it, I acknowledge it, I go, what a wonderful thing, rather than saying, what an idiot, that's not going to happen. I go, what a beautiful thing. I want to know that guy. I want to get to know that guy. Circumstances don't have anything to do with the quality of my life. There is something in me that's watching the circumstances in my life. I think that's the thing that awakens. The thing that's right here, right now. What is it in you that's unchanged since your earliest memories? Who are you between your thoughts? Who are you between your feelings? See, that's the thing that awakens. And I used to think that's nothing. No, that becomes everything. That is a spiritual life. The spiritual life is not a theory. Ready for this? Everything else is. What I think you're thinking of me right now is not what you're thinking of me. What I think you've been through this day or this, not what you've been through. I wrote a poem, Leaves Are Not Green. The light hits the leaf. The light is absorbed by the leaf, and then the leaf rejects every other photon. And all those photons come into my eye, and I see them as green. So I'm seeing what the leaf is not. So everything I see is illusion. It really says in the back of the book, we realize we know only a little. And you know, there's a lot of peace in that. I came into the program and I came back down that morning and I woke my wife up and I told her, I said, I've been a son of a bitch. I just told her. I said, what I was doing, I was tired of lying. I got tired of lying. I said, what am I going to tell her? That I lied about the appointment. What am I going to stop lying about? And I said everything. It's not in the book anywhere, folks. I had not read the book, not been in the program, don't know anything about that. I was just tired of lying. And I have a very amazing wife who could handle that, you know. And I made the call to behavioral services, and they said, well, we can get you in August 31st. I said, I don't think you understand. I've been drinking a fifth of vodka a day. I need help. And they said, we'll call you right back. And the next week, I started treatment at Kaiser, and then I came in my first meeting at 8111 Friday, so it's 10 days after I quit drinking. Came to my first meeting because Kaiser was going to take care of my thinking, and then AA was going to teach me how to drink responsibly. That was my plan. Turns out nobody in AA has any idea about how to drink responsibly. And I came out of the meeting, and my sister said, how long are you going to have to go to those meetings? I said, the rest of my life. And I'll tell you what I saw. I saw these traditions on the wall. The traditions is what I saw. See, I'm a guy who did contracts in business. This is an amazing contract. There is no other contract like this. This is now, these living these traditions in my life has become one of the greatest gifts of AA. The steps are a really good start. Do not stop there. The traditions will change your life. Each and every one of them has deep meaning. First is unity. And at the heart of every great religion is the concept of unity, becoming joined as one, that very thing inside of me between my thoughts. I also then, what happened was I saw that, all of a sudden I saw it in you, and then all of a sudden it was like, God, same thing. That's just that's what happened to me. That's what my experience has been. And today I'm moving the presence of that all day long. So I want to wrap up by telling you what happened today that's been neat. My grandson, who's just under 3 years old, comes walking in the door with my daughter and says, my daughter's trying to console him. You know why? I want my snow. I want my snow back. Can I have my snow back? We were in Colorado, and we were at this Broadmoor, great hotel, amazing thing. My father-in-law took us to, and we're walking around the pond. We're going over to see this hovercraft, the little personal hovercraft. And he loves machines. You know, he's all about machines. He's all engineer. And we're walking around there, and we go to and we get to a fence, and there's a gate. And I said, oh, well, it's locked. We can't go any further. He looks at it for a second, and he's not even as high as this. He looks up at me and says, I need a ladder. Today, you know what? It's wonder and awe. You know, everything's a new discovery. It's discovery. And you know what? That to be childlike again. To think, to realize I don't know very much, and that it can just be a discovery. That each moment can be a discovery like that. And at the same time, to get a call from somebody. And I've told him, it was just the other day I got this call from her. And there was a meeting at 7 o'clock right around the corner with a lot of very strong women in the program. She could walk to it. Her mom took her keys. Doesn't matter. She could walk there. And she was not willing. Now, I'll tell you this. One of the great revelations for me in this program is that the word creator. The word creator in the book, and when I first read it as an atheist, I thought, this is a mistake. You don't put that in. That's a religious word. In fact, the Supreme Court agreed, for the purposes of the federal prison system, AA is a religion, as of a ruling in 1999. Very interesting ruling. And you know what AA's opinion on that was? Nothing. They had no opinion on that outside issue. But the reason that the Supreme Court thought that is the word creator is in the book. Okay? Now, the amazing thing for me today is to realize I did not create me. What did I didn't pick my parents. What about the willingness to do this program? We've been to the jail, right? I've got all the willingness, and I pour out willingness, and I cannot give you an ounce of my willingness. I would love to give it to you in buckets full, but it's not mine to give. Somehow it's yours to ask for. I don't know. But if you've got it, hold on. gift. Everything I am is a gift. I did not make me. And in that mode, in that soil, pride had absolutely no purchase. Okay? The definite realization that of everything I am is a gift. How many ancestors do you have? You know, if the evolutionists have got it right, I'm a chemical reaction that's been going on for 3.5 billion years. I still find that fascinating. And you know what? For a long time, it wasn't enough. And today, when I recognize I did not create me, everything I am is a gift. And then I look back and I see in the definition of gratitude in my little pocket dictionary, it's about that big, but it's a pocket dictionary. It says, gratitude is the willingness to return a kindness. So what I do in this program is I try and return back to creation what he gave me. And that's all I need to do. One little step at a time. How do I add to the quality of the lives of the people around me? And then I get quality by reflection, not by grabbing. It's not in quantity. It's about quality. And I'm able to spend quality time with my grandson and at the same time try and help out a suffering alcoholic. I want to thank you all. Thank you for the honor of coming down here and for my friends who have helped on the journey down here. And I really want to say this. May the peace that passes all understanding be with you now. Thank you.